Welcome to your booster shot from the AWB Education Network. This podcast series is our opportunity to dive even deeper into the topics and skills that will help you lead your school with confidence. Check out information on our partners along with additional resources and services at www.awbeducation.org. Now, here is your booster shot.
All right, I am here today with Jim Wichman. Jim, thanks for joining me today. We're going to talk a little bit about your work with Inspired Edification. Can you tell me a little bit about what that is?
Inspired Edification is a LLC that my wife and I kind of put together. We started off as working with aspiring administrators, and we saw kind of a cause that went there. I actually had a good buddy of mine, Jeremy Braden, work with us on that. And that kind of evolved into really more of what we're doing locally and nationally.
Okay. Now, you've been in school leadership for a long time. Talk to me a little bit about that path through school leadership and where you're at today. What's got you here? What's made Jim Wichman, Jim Wichman?
That's actually a scary and good question along the way. There's been a lot of people and instances that have built me to who I clearly started in Ottumwa, and we'll get back to that a little later on. But really, I've been a school administrator for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Majority of my time has been spent in the middle school. That's really where my heart is along the way. Although it wasn't planned, a lot of my journeys have been around systems that might need to be right the ship, I guess you would say.
Sure,
right the ship,
course.
Maybe academically, culturally, along the way. And really, that's kind of led me to, well, every location I've ever been, ending with my time here at the last middle school I was at.
Yeah. I mean, the job of educational leadership is hard, and it changes constantly, constantly. Why do you think that is so critical to have good, strong leadership? And then also, how do you continue to grow as a leader?
So leadership has grown. I mean, when I think about 25 years, what it was, I can also say what it was 5 years ago. I evolved from a lot of different lessons. Some of them were from the School of Hard Knocks, but I've been really surrounded by wonderful humans. And I got to really shout out to all the assistant principals that I've worked with, their native students, mostly because they help me see a different light or a different lens. A majority of the people who have built me into what I was as a school leader have been female leaders. Clearly an underappreciated, in my mind, population. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't be the person I am today with just a ton of lessons. But the fact that they leaned in, they honored me enough to tell me what their lens looked like, and then I had to reciprocate that. So when you ask the question about leaders today, there are a lot of things coming at our principals.
Yes.
Clearly make no mistake about it. When we have so much coming at us, it becomes very difficult to filter out and keep our own perspective.
Yeah.
And what happens is we feel guilty because we're servant leaders. We feel guilty for putting ourselves at the center and taking care of ourselves. So you heard a lot about like work-life balance and how do we establish that?
Of course.
I was terrible at that when I started off. I was terrible at it.
Yeah.
So I don't think I was at the center. Heck, my wife and kids weren't even at the center.
Yeah.
And I think there's guilt there, obviously, but I don't want the current people to feel that way. I think if I would have had someone to help coach me, like, now this is the perspective. You don't have to be the first one at school every day.
Right.
You don't have to be the last
one.
Take
your Superman cape off.
Take your Superman cape off.
Absolutely.
Set it right next to your ego.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of like, and I think that perspective is really what I set out to do. So I stepped away from being a school principal, I think it was 2022. And I remember sitting at my desk, it was the fall of 21, thinking about, I have to do something different. We have so much white noise that's coming at our teachers, telling them how to do their job or what and education, I shouldn't just say teachers. And our educators are so dang humble that they sat there and they just took the pounding over and over again. And they would say things, it's okay, it's okay. Well, it's not okay. Politician is not who I wanted to be, but I needed to do something. And right now I want to disrupt the educators. I want them to be celebrating. I want them to be letting people know what they're actually doing. What's crazy about this, going through the pandemic, with like 2020, kids had to go home and everybody wanted the kids back at school because they were the trained teachers. Yeah. Isn't it right? Remember that?
Absolutely.
2 years later, all of a sudden, everybody's the educator. Everybody who has not been in a classroom becomes the experts telling us what books to read, how to do it, how to teach, what to teach. And then, oh, by the way, navigating all the behaviors of our kids that are struggling with as well.
Yeah.
I want to get in and help people celebrate all the work we're doing And maybe if we kind of like get this celebration happening, we become form like a vibration that goes up and we start working together. And then all of a sudden we start silencing the outside, the white noise. Sure. Now, as a principal, I feel like I did a pretty good job of protecting those that I served at the last school. However, I want it bigger and better. I want to impact all of the systems to make sure that people know that they matter and that what they do is worthy of celebration along the way. As you can see, I get a little excited.
So I think the reason you're excited is because you've defined your why. Now, we talk about that a lot with leaders about how do you define your why? And if you don't really know what that is, that might be the first part to start at, right? Like you've really got to determine that. What got you to your why? I mean, you can feel the passion from you. What got you there? How did you get there?
It was probably 2018. So I've been a principal for a while.
Yeah.
Then I had an instructional coach at the school I was at say, Jim, I think they need to hear your why. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I hated it, despised it when people would say, who's your why? What's your why? What's your purpose? Yeah. Remember your why? All that. I hated it because I don't know if really people understood what that really meant. And so I was challenged to do it. And I kind of really did a lot of thinking over that winter break and came back and shared. It was the day back, I think it was 2019, 18, something like that. And really, it came down to this. I have a single mother raising four kids in a town called Atumal, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And in that town, they may not have a lot of things, but what they do have is true grit and care for the people that live in that town.
Absolutely.
And I remember that school district never once judged my mom for not being there in the morning when we went to school. Didn't judge my mother once for not being there at home when the kids got home.
Yeah.
In fact, it was just the opposite. I remember a sixth grade student, back when we had half day kindergarten.
Yeah.
The principal would pay me to be the, what do you call it, safety patrol during the lunchtime for the kindergartners.
Yeah.
$5. Now, I didn't know where that money came from back then.
Sure.
I do now.
Yeah.
I know exactly where it was. Or Friday night football and the teachers or someone would reach out to my mom and say, hey, Jimmy's got a game at Fairfield. Teresa, do you have a ride for him?
Yeah.
And just making sure that she got there because everybody knew she wanted to be at all of her kids' games.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I could go on and talk about the Larry Zolkes of the middle school who made me feel like I belonged as a human. Mm. I could talk about all the teachers at the high school that no matter how many lemons I gave them, they returned a glass of lemonade.
Yeah.
There was a scholarship, teaching scholarship, whatever the case is. And someone said, Jim, I knew I was going to be in education since probably eighth grade.
Yeah.
Jim, how come you didn't apply for that? I looked at him and said, because my GPA isn't high enough.
Yeah.
They looked at me and said, sit down, fill it out, apply. Now, I won the scholarship. Mm-hmm. Lesson there is, we have to see the human before the title, the human before the GPA, the human before, name all that, whatever it is, we got to see the human. I didn't really understand that then.
Sure.
Maybe it felt as pity, whatever the case is, but I believe every student to my being needs to have that same experience that I did at Atumal Community School.
Yeah.
They were there for my whole family. They were there for my mother, and they still are today.
Yeah.
It's amazing, amazing group of people.
I don't care what school district you're in, and I would venture to say across the country, those stories are there, or at least certainly could be. The opportunity for that story is there. And I know that school leaders, we're always trying to just manage all of the fires and everything else that comes along. But your story is about one family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there were more.
Amen.
But the impact was that large for one. And sometimes even just venturing out to make that impact for one person or one family, it's worth all of that effort.
I can give stories after stories now that's still happening. I was hosting an orientation and I was speaking and a parent got in late and it was crowded. The parent sits down and I can't take my eyes off this parent because I know this guy. I know him.
Mm-hmm.
I can't figure out who it is. So it became the assistant principal's time to talk. I went over to him and I said, excuse me, sir, but you look so familiar to me. My wife laughs because I think everybody looks familiar to me. So he looks at me and he goes, Mr. Wichman, it's me, Mark. And I thought, oh yeah, I remember now. It just took me right back.
Yeah.
It was 97 is when the last time I saw this young man.
Yeah.
afterwards, we were talking around and he told a story. There was a bunch of parents standing around out sitting there. He tells a story about, so I never had Mark as a student. I had him as a coach him in wrestling.
Okay.
But it was in the middle of school at that time. And he tells a story about, you saw me one morning and you knew something wasn't right. And you tried to talk to me. I wouldn't talk with you. You stayed with me. You followed me into my locker because you knew something wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got me to another room and then I started crying. He said, you saw me not well at that moment and you stayed with me.
Yeah.
He had found out the night before that his parents were getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is that? 25 years later?
Yeah.
He's telling me this story that was just like one little thing. That doesn't happen if my experience in school doesn't see that character and nurture that along the way. And like you said, name the school.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's just their stories are there and we don't spend time celebrating them. We're just so worried about doing the next email, one more conversation, one more phone call, one more. And we forget our perspective when we just got to stop and celebrate. Just stop. I can go on to other situations as a principal. I'd have teachers say, Jim, it's time to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would say, okay, we're going to have forced family fun.
Yeah.
And then we would do something as a staff to kind of just like relax a little bit within there.
And then not feel guilty about it.
That's
the hardest part, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, we got to give ourselves permission.
Absolutely.
I know I'm still getting fired up with that, but that's exactly right, Adam. We got to give ourselves permission to keep ourselves in the center. So if you think about yourself in the center, and then maybe your spouse, girlfriend, whatever it is, kids on the outside of that ring.
Yep.
And probably the core values.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You leave here, you find 10 people, you ask the first 10 people you see, or go to your work and ask them, the first 10 people you see, what are your three core values? I bet you get zero people mm-hmm. know what their three core values are.
Yeah. We're certainly going to stop and take a long time to think about it.
Stop. And we don't take time for it because it's like, oh yeah, I know what they are. What?
Do you? Yeah.
Because here's what happens. When those, we don't know them, those core values get damaged, crossed,
sure.
impacted. And we instantly go to emotional side because it hurts. But if we name them and wait, what if we shared them with people so that as you see that something's compromising my faith, my family, and my integrity,
yeah,
you're going to lean in. You're going to know that the day I take my mom to the care center, mm-hmm. you're going to need lean in to me and you're going to know that I need a little bit more support because we're humans.
That vulnerability is hard for a lot of people because unfortunately, I think the mantra for some is that if I show vulnerability, I show weakness.
Yep.
And where it's typically the opposite. It's honestly me being willing enough to say, hey, I can't do it all. It's not possible to do it all, especially do it all well. Having that ability to talk to somebody or to at least have a good colleague that you confide in. I mean, there's a lot of opportunities out there for people to be able to get a chance to get to that why or get to those core values. And it's okay not to do that all on your own. And in fact, it's probably better if you don't.
The vulnerability, you had asked me earlier about what was my journey and how did I evolve?
Yeah.
I was forced vulnerability at times
mm-hmm.
from my mistakes or from coaching.
Well, we learn.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, some of us learn quicker than others, I can't say I'm one of those. But I remember one time being in my office, having a conversation with an instructional coach who our conversations, if you think of Brené Brown getting into the arena without armor on.
Absolutely.
For a cause.
Yeah.
Well, we've been in the arena with our armor on at times and our armor off.
Sure.
And one time we were in conversation and I was so confused why people are so worried about taking chances of whatever the case is. And she closed her book and she said, she talked in my language. I understand. Do you want to get real with this? You want me to tell you why? I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, tell me. I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
She said, you built a culture of compliance.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's not true.
Check the box.
Yeah. I check in with Jim. Jim's got to do this. I didn't like that.
Yep.
I argued with her. And then she did something that I just, to this day, I'll never forget. She started naming examples, everything. Okay. She got to about 8 and I got up and stormed out of my own office. She stayed.
Mm-hmm.
I walked around,
mm-hmm.
came back, sat down, and then said, where do we start? Now, people would think you're the principal. You should know all this.
Yeah, well, yeah.
That was the day.
Yeah.
That was the day when I learned it's not about me. The humans are working together. The title just tells us what our job role responsibilities is. And nowhere on any job description for a principal does it say know everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we think it's supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy, mm-hmm. just crazy to me. So after that, we started leaning into every the staff's strengths. Professional development looked differently.
Yeah.
Because we started giving them the professional development that they needed.
Started differentiating a little
bit. Yeah. Right. And I'm going to tell you, it was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out, though, that I was the problem. Hi, me, I'm the problem. Because I was trying so hard to protect everybody from things, that I didn't allow them the opportunity to lead,
mm-hmm.
show their strength.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I started sliding myself back to the center because I could.
Yeah. Gave yourself permission.
In fact, we're talking about leaning into strengths. I remember sitting at a staff meeting. It's probably 80 people in there. And I'm trying to give directions. It's not my forte to give directions. And I remember someone in the audience raising their hand. Hey, Jim, love your enthusiasm. But do you think Kathleen, the assistant principal, can give the directions moving forward? Two things happen with that. One, I know you can see my body language just like, oh, God, yes. This is so stressful. Gave me direction. You just gave me permission to give Kathleen permission.
Exactly.
Two, I modeled vulnerability with that.
Absolutely.
I guess in the third one would be I also empowered someone else.
Yeah. Yep.
And how cool is that?
Yeah. And certainly leaned into those strengths. Mm-hmm. So you talk about that. How do you now in the role that you're in right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
How do you help school leaders create an environment where they feel inspired to make meaningful change like you're talking about? Because that meaningful change, typically when we use that term in education, we're talking about some sort of an initiative or something else. But really what you're talking about there is the meaningful change within yourself, within your culture, and just within how you do business. How do you inspire a leader to get to that part?
There's a book. One book that kind of responds to here is called QBQ, Question Behind the Question by John Miller.
Okay.
39 chapters.
Yeah.
Each chapter is about 1 to 2 pages. Love the book.
Yeah.
In that one of those chapters, it says, it takes a play on the serenity prayer. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change things, can of wisdom, know the difference. Yeah. He says, God grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, courage to change the one I can, and wisdom to know that it's me. You see, you can't change a system if you don't look at yourself and see where you need to modify your operation, which is putting yourself back in the center. And if you were to talk about listen to Jimmy Casas' podcast or read his books, he talks about you can lead from the perimeter. So you tell everybody what to do, or you can step in and really kind of name the issue and really lean into that. So when I'm working with people, whether it be as a coach, a workshop, or even as a keynote, you're not going to ever get me. I'm not going to ask you to fill out forms or you do these magical things and all of a sudden, poof, everything's great.
Yeah.
Actually, that just drives people crazy.
Yeah.
We also have people just doing their best. Like if they want to support the administrators, they pull them into a group. Yep. When they're pulling them into a group, you're not really necessarily differentiating, but we're pulling them away from a building. And then whatever's done there, we lose. I walk with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I start with them. I get to know them, who they are, what they're about. I know their families. I know what they're trying to do. And once we get that relationship that's pretty tight, then it becomes real.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about, what do you want your name tagged to?
Oh, I like that.
When do you want to, are you ready to level up? And they'll say, what do you mean level up? Well, you've been swimming in this for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about we level up? Because if we level up, that means that we're taking care of procedures, stretchers, and everything else so that you can take care of yourself. I've had people text me and say, hey, Jim, I left school at 4 o'clock or 5, you know, whatever it is, early. And sometimes I'm like, celebrate the heck out of that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sometimes I'll say, great. Now let's go 30 minutes earlier. You can do it. Yeah. You can do it.
Yeah.
And they just need that reassurance because a lot of times they don't give themselves permission to do so as well. So they're looking for some of that.
Sure.
And we'll look at the clarity concepts. Let's get it clear. Then they don't have to keep coming to you.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise our people are just putting out fires left and right, jumping on the hamster wheel. We're just kind of struggling with that every day.
You just never even get a chance to breathe, let alone see the end of that tunnel, right?
No.
So you talked a little bit about your keynote speaking. I know that I have heard that your keynotes can often be described as more inspirational than motivational. And I get that. I can feel it here. But when you hear that, can you explain that difference to me? And why does the focus on inspiration really mean so much to you?
Yeah, it does mean a lot to me. And so it really set me back. It was from an aspiring administrator in Arizona. Motivating to me is, you know, my football coach did a great job of motivating
me.
I'm going to get out there. I'm going to do this.
Yep.
Like it's a little spurt.
Yep.
Win. But we all know that our motivation fades.
Absolutely.
Enter the month of February.
Mm-hmm.
Enter the month of January.
Yep.
Name it whatever it is.
Second armpit of the year that we're in right now.
Right.
And we're there. Yep.
So inspirational to me means that I said something or did something that struck an emotion inside of someone. An emotion that maybe they were wrestling with at some point along the way. And that maybe I gave them permission to step into those emotions mm-hmm. versus suppress those emotions. You know, when people say, we have these shatterings. These shatterings go about, you know, where it could be something as a disruptor,
mm-hmm.
whether it be you're on your way to work and you get a flat tire in the rain.
Okay.
You daze tossed for a little bit.
It's over.
It's over. You're on the way to host a meeting as a principal and you're, or a teacher and your 2-year-old throws up on your shoulder.
Yeah.
Just disrupts you. And it could be bigger events. Just, you know, life passes on some bigger events as well. But instead of stuffing those down, saying what they are and stop trying to self-medicate by saying, it's okay, I'm good. It's okay, I'm good. And keep shoving it down. Now, if people are listening to this, they'd probably say, oh my gosh, Jim, you say that. You used to say that all the time, which is true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. We all learn.
We all learn. But I didn't learn for a while. I remember a teacher, teachers would get in, you know, conversations with me and they'd start sharing some personal things and I didn't know really know how to help. But I did know that our school system had three therapist visits.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
And so I'm like, I want to promote that I support mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually encourage people to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Until I had one teacher ask me the question, what's it like at therapy, Jim? Well, I don't know. I've never been.
Yeah.
And in my head, I'm thinking, because I don't need a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good. Just keep shoving things down. So I went. I went to a therapist and the first meeting was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get two more.
Get to know each other a little bit.
Yeah, I could get to know each other a little bit. Yeah. I go to the second one and then it was the same thing. And then towards halfway through it, she said, what's your earliest memory as a kid?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. I was 4 years old. I got woke up in the middle of the night by some noise. So I go out and I turn to my left and I see my dad on top of my mom with his hands around her neck. I think it was because something wasn't cleaned underneath the sink or something like that. And I can remember her saying, Jimmy's watching. But I was fine. I was good. There was some disruption there, but we got back on track. It was good. And then the therapist was looking at me now with a little different eyes wide open a little bit more, hearing how easily it was for me to talk about this. So then she says things, you know, talk to me about your house, your bedroom, your car, whatever this is. And I thought, those are weird, but you're the therapist.
Yeah, sure. I'll do what you ask me to do. Yeah.
I got a clean car. Always got a clean car. If you don't see my car clean, there's probably something going on.
Yeah.
You know, my head, whatever the case is. I always like a clean counter. And the kitchen counter. I clean that counter and I swear the more I clean it, people want to put stuff on it. I clear it, put stuff on it.
Yeah.
And she said, Jim, I think you're equating tidiness to safety. She said, next time when you come back, we're going to talk about that. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be great.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's going to give me something I can say to my whole family that says, you guys have to pick up and how rude of you to be doing this to me. So I tell them, they're like, oh boy, I go back to Shannon the next time. And she says this to me, and she goes, all right. And I got my notebook out, and I'm ready to write. I'm going to write whatever she says. She says, okay, the next time you see that counter messy, next time I see that counter messy, as I write it down, she says, I want you to look at all the mess on there and say this. And then I wrote down, look at the mess. Say this. No matter what, under any circumstance, I'm safe. No matter what, under any circumstance, I'm safe. I wrote it down. I underlined it.
Yeah.
No matter what, under any circumstance, I'm safe. Okay. So I say that. Then what? She goes, then you can go put the stuff wherever it goes. Put the stuff I wrote down. Put the stuff wherever it goes. And I'm writing it because I'm pressing on my paper. I'm underlining and everything. And then I said, then what? And then she said, just go about your business.
Yeah.
Because you get the choice to get angry at everybody or know that you're safe. See, Jim, you have to retrain your brain. The clutter doesn't mean you're not safe. Just means that how you internalize it.
Yeah.
So I go home and I'm ready to tell everybody, you know, I'm thinking of the thought I was going to come home and tell everybody this. They're waiting for me. They know that the thunder's coming or whatever the case is. And I told them just like I told you. And then I said, I guess therapy is all about me. And then I just walked off. Now, I say that story because I think it's okay that people know that I go to a therapist.
Yeah, sure.
In fact, I was having so much success. This is probably 5-6 years ago. So much success. The therapist says, Jim, so we're good? Are you? I'm like, wait a second. Are you breaking up with me? No, I'll see you next month. Man, I need that regular basis. But I say that not just to celebrate the power of therapy. I say that because that just gave me freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the distance between a stimulus and a response,
mm-hmm.
the greater you can create that space,
yeah.
the more freedom we have in the rational sense of mind.
I like that.
And the more that we have that opportunity to do so. So when you go back to when you're talking to me about the principles and everything's coming out of, that space is narrowing because we think that everything has to be done right away. We do need to have it done within our time frame, obviously.
Sure, sure.
But we can build capacity within a system. And the bigger the capacity is and have those clear expectations, the more we can keep ourselves at the center. You see, I got better as a principal because I allowed people to lean in and help me.
Mm-hmm.
I allowed people to see me as a human. In fact, they would often, it's at one point in my career, they would say, you don't really know us. And I thought I did.
Mm-hmm.
Until I didn't,
yeah.
which means I needed to sit down and I needed to listen. Instead of trying to solve people's problems,
yeah.
you just needed to listen sometimes.
Well, Jim, before we let you go here, I do want to ask you one question, and that is, what are you most excited about? I mean, we get caught in the, yes, this job is hard, and there's a lot going on in politics and in everything around the world of education today. However, there's still a lot of exciting things that are going on in education too. It's hard to see them sometimes because we get caught up in the other. What are you most excited about today about what you see in the field of education?
You are correct. We don't make the time to celebrate those little things.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, our energy changes.
Mm-hmm.
And second of all, our kids deserve us to celebrate versus blasting us. So you see, we can't control all the politics. I mean, you can vote, but we can't control what they say. Can't control what the public says. But what we can do is we can define our narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like if you were to ask me, I wonder what my legacy will be when I leave.
Sure.
How about you define your legacy and then live the behaviors that support that? School systems, the people that work in education, the schools, they have a lot more control than they believe they can because no one's stopping us from celebrating each other. No one's stopping us for being there or being vulnerable with each other. What excites me about this opportunity that I'm in now is I get to be a part of disrupting the negative,
mm-hmm.
clear it out a little bit so people can see the superpowers that each one of them has,
mm-hmm.
and then bring it together like the Justice League, if you will.
Yeah.
And we do that by simple actions, greeting people, complimenting their clothes, complimenting the work they did, sitting in the classroom just to celebrate the magic that each teacher does. Yeah. It takes seconds to minutes to do so.
But the impact is huge.
The impact is huge.
Huge.
So if I go back to Otomo, they sent me to a conference one time, and that conference, a leadership conference, and I always joke because it's true that I flew my first airplane that time, and I was, they upgraded me to the non-smoking section on the airplane.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
But I was all in my feels, and Terrell had said to me, hey, Jimmy, you don't have to move the world.
Mm.
Just shake it as you go by. I didn't know what it meant then. I clearly know what it means now. It's doing what you're doing, Adam. It's you're getting a message out that there's a lot of great things in education. It's talking with people. It's joking with people. It's celebrating the little things.
Yeah.
The glasses, the braces, whatever the case is.
Absolutely.
It's the little things that matter. And if we do a lot more shaking the world as we go by, then we've got something really special. And educators are leaning into each other. And before too long, the parents are going to come back and we're going to be doing this. I've been blessed that parents have been so supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
I just want everybody else to feel that same experience or that same excitement. I feel very honored to be a part of here representing Inspired Edification and Jay Casas and Associates.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a senior associate there. That's what it is. We're humans supporting humans who are supporting humans.
Well, that is awesome, Jim. I thank you. Can't even begin to thank you enough for jumping on today. Your story is just amazing. And if you're wanting to hear more of this story and be able to get some of Jim's work alongside your work, because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be right next to you as you work through your challenges every day as well. In the information within this podcast, you will find all that information that you need to be able to get a hold of Jim. We've got his information on our AWB Education webpage as well. Jim, one more time, thanks again for joining me today.
I love this, Adam. Thank you very much for having me here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of your Booster Shot from AWB Education. Want to join in this mission? We are always looking for partners to help provide what our school leaders need to thrive and survive. Contact us through our webpage at www.awbeducation.org to get connected. Otherwise, remember you are doing the job that only a few are strong enough to do. Thanks for being one of the few. We will talk with you again next time.